I am an amateur radio operator, as you know. Well, now, an amateur radio operator, for those of you who do not know it, is not a guy who does a bad radio show on WOR. you see, I beat you to it, Dad. An amateur radio operator, you got to be pretty far out in front to get ahead of old Shep there, you know. I'm serious, you know. I, George, I run my own interference. Well, anyway, an amateur radio operator is a guy who has a little radio station in his house. And it's often not very little, actually. As a matter of fact, it is quite often larger than most of the radio stations here in town. You know, the little stations you hear way down at the end of the dial, as was the case with mine at that point. I was running pretty good power. For those of you who are hams, I'll tell you, I was running 500 watts into a pair of T55s, if you're interested, what the technical layout was there. Class B modulation, push-pull 807s. Driven by push-pull parallel 6L6s. I was using an Astatic D104 mic. We could go on and on, but at that time I was happened to be on CW. And I was on 20 meters. Now, you got the picture. Now, I'm this kid. At this point, I'm about 16, you see, and I'm just beginning to put out shoots and vines and stuff. And I'm just beginning to observe the world around me, literally observe it in connection with me, you know, up to a certain point. A kid looks at the world as though he's not even part of it. He is totally unconnected with it. A child is not literally a part of the world. And then at a certain point in your life, you observe the world and you in context. That's when you start getting bugged. I mean, that's when you start having troubles. Then, later on, you don't even observe the world anymore. You just look at your own navel. That means you're mature when you do that. Well, I'm in the stage where I'm looking at the world, and I'm, you know, I'm a little worried about the world. And I'm concerned with such things as, you know, when you're 16 years old, you always figure you're not going to live to be 21. It's the truth. And you see yourself being not essentially a heroic death, but being a tragic death, that either you are going to go blind by the time you're 21, usually it's a combination of blindness and death which will overtake you by the time you're 21. And everyone, of course, will be fantastically sorry about this, just fantastically sorry, and they will love you incredibly, because you'll be gone, and you will be gone sort of benignly. I'm going to describe yourself that your death is going to be benign. You will be kindly towards them as you leave. You will be sorry about leaving, but somehow it's great because of the way you're going, you see. Well, anyway, I saw myself as not making it till the time I'm 21. I'm right in the middle of that, you see. Right in the middle of that period. I'm about 15, 16, something like that. And I've got this rig, and I'm on 20 meters, and I am known as the youngest amateur radio operator in the 9th call district at that point. Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. Oh, yeah, you'll never guess. I was a child prodigy. In the wrong field, but a child prodigy, nevertheless, you know, some guys are child prodigies where it pays, when they, you know, 20 meters, what's this? You know, but seriously, I was a gold medal winner one time in a CW, you know, in a big national CW contest. You don't push me around, I'm pretty good there. At least I was at one time. I moved pretty fast there around that old McElroy, that bug. Well, anyway, I'm sitting there that day, and I'm a little worried about the world, always. You know, kids are always a little bugged by it, and I've got my rig going, and I'm talking to a guy, I'll never forget, I was talking to a guy in Denver on 20 meters CW. My call, I'll send it to you in case you're interested, I'll send it. Did you copy that, Ed? Isn't that a nice swing? Had a real good swing. And then I'm talking to this nine. I'll just have to invent a call of his. I don't recall what his call was, but it was a nine up in Denver. I'll invent his call. At that time, Denver was in the 9th district. I'll invent his call. Da 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 da. Then I had this real jazzy sign up. Da 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 da. Oh boy, I really had style, you know. And I'm sitting there. I just remember I signed for this guy. See, I went da 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 da, and I'm sitting there with my Brandy's headphones on, they're clamped down there, 19 pounds on each ear, And I'm a very very nonchalant CW man. I'll have to start pulling rank here. At one point, I had a 45 RPM certificate, a 45 WPM certificate. That means 45 words a minute, which is very fast for amateur CW. And at one point, I was able to push. Well, I hesitate to tell you, it'll sound like just sheer braggadocio, but at one point I was pushing 55, which is real fast for CW. And so I'm a very I throw the key off, you know, and I'm waiting there. I hear him and I'm just sitting back there. Now, we're two real hard grizzled vets here in CW communication, and I'm literally in control of my world. This is what I'm trying to tell you. I had the world that way, you see. And I have been able to forget for a moment, you know, that I'm scared of the world and everything else, and I'm sitting there, and I'm in the kitchen. My mother, the radio's going, see, it's about 5 o'clock. Now, this is the Midwest. It is July or August. It is hot. Summer. Boom. And the lake is just laying off there. I lived about a mile and a half from Lake Michigan. And the skies were gray and overcast. And it had been raining a little bit, off and on, all afternoon. And just one of those hot, muggy, steamy kind of days that is part of the Midwest. They, believe me, you guys don't know anything about hot, muggy days. Seriously, because you always have something which they do not have. You have that ocean out there. That ocean tempers it here, and you think you've got it better. Oh, boy. You ought to be in northern Indiana in the middle of August when that sun is beaming down and there isn't a breath of air stirring, and there hasn't been a breath of air for, say, like 6 weeks. You know, there's a sea breeze breaks out here every night. About the time you're ready to go to bed, a sea breeze sweeps out over New York because we're an island. Well, they don't have that sea. So it is hot, and it is steaming. And I'm sitting there, and I'm wearing a T-shirt. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you what the T-shirt was. It was the uniform shirt of a ball team that I happened to be playing on at the time. And it was a gold and maroon uniform shirt. I remember this because after the fiasco, I had to replace it. It was gold and maroon. It had gold sleeves, and it was maroon in the front, see? And it had gold sleeves, and on the back, it said Flick's Tavern on the back. You interested? And on the front, it said 16. Okay? You got it. Okay, you got the picture. Well, I'm sitting there, and on the bottom, I'm wearing nothing but shorts. In case you're interested, Fruit of the Loom. So I'm wearing Fruit of the Loom shorts, and as was the case always with my shorts in those days, all the rubber on the side, you know, the boxer rubber on the side had pulled out, and I had 9 pins on each side, see, so it would fit me, so they wouldn't fall down. And I'm also wearing tennis shoes. And I'm sweating bullets, as they said in the Midwest. You're always sweating bullets. And nobody had air conditioning in their houses in those days. You just opened the window, and you had screens, metal screens. Okay, you got the picture? Now, up on top of my house, I had 2 50-foot towers. One on top of the house, one on top of the garage, which was about, oh, I'd say 75 to 100 feet away. And strung between those 2 60-foot or 50-foot towers they were, strung between those 2 towers, which were made of 2x2s, painted white. This was my pride and joy. I had worked all half of one summer building this structure. I had strung a 40-meter ZEP, a flat-top ZEP. This is a type of antenna. You know what the term ZEP refers to? Zeppelin antenna. I can go into that. Well, you know, you're not interested in that. But it's a transmitting antenna with heavy-gauge wire and a pair of 600-ohm feeders coming down. Now, these feeders were widespread wires that were like a ladder, if you can imagine a ladder with 6-inch ceramic spreaders that would be the steps on the ladder. Yeah, okay, you got it? And it came right down from my antenna and was attached to various insulators that I had running down the side of the house. Big, high, well, actually, they turned out to be high-loss insulators, but they were supposed to be low-loss insulators setting out from the house. And finally, I had them fed right in through the sill of the... I had holes drilled in the sill, you see, and I had these Isilon-type feed-throughs, and they came to all very efficient, you see, all the way on up to my antenna tuning unit, which was on the top of my 6-foot rack. Now, there you got the picture. inside, and the room that I'm in is on the corner of the house. We had a bungalow, a wooden bungalow that had a basement. I've described the house. It had an attic, and this right outside of my window was a tree, and right below the tree was a beautiful lawn of the house next door to us. It was truly idyllic. I did not realize it at the time. People just accept their lives, and in this tree there were always maybe 25 cardinals. You know, you don't see many cardinals around here, do you? Cardinals are a rare bird, but in my part of the country, cardinals were as common, almost, as sparrows are around here. And so I would see the cardinals hopping from branch to branch. Beautiful bird. I think one of the most beautiful birds in America. But they were just cardinals then, you know, just a bird. So the red birds are hopping back and forth on the tree out there. A cardinal has an odd cry anyway. And when it rains, cardinals do peculiar things. They huddle together in trees. Are you aware of that? And so the cardinals are yapping around outside, right outside my window. They're about 3 feet out. I'm sitting right by the window, which is open. And it has a metal screen on it, an old screen to keep the flies out. And the screen was kind of billowed out, you know, and one part was a little rusty. And I'm sitting there, and I had this old desk, which I had bought at Scott's used furniture place, where I used to work. I bought the desk for $7.50, and it was a gigantic oak desk, you know, the kind with the two rows of drawers, one on each side, and a big thing that folds out where the typewriter's supposed to go. It weighed 500,000 pounds, that kind of a desk, you see. And right behind my desk, up against the wall, between me, really, off on the left-hand side, to my left, was my rack that went all practically to the ceiling. It was a 6-foot rack, metal rack, right up, with metal panels and my transmitter in this thing, which I had built at fantastic expenditure of sweat, blood, tears, etc. So there it is. Now you got the picture. And I've talked to this guy in Denver. Out in the kitchen, my mother is fixing dinner. She's whipping up the spaghetti. My kid brother's fooling around out in the dining room, just fooling around. He's a kid brother, you know, hollering. You know what kid brothers do. And I'm sitting in there doing this very esoteric pursuit, which none of them understood. That's another important part of the story. To them, I was always, are you fooling with that radio stuff again? Why don't you come to bed? For crying out loud, will you stop all the noise in there? I can't hear nothing. All the while, you could hear the code and everything going on, you see. And it all looked very dangerous to my mother. My mother belonged to the school of people who, whenever she saw a piece of wire on the ground, she says, don't touch it, you'll get electrocuted. You know, that kind of, it's a live wire. They always were afraid of live wires. You find a little wire out in the, you know, in the ballpark. It's a live wire. Don't touch it. And I would bring a piece of wire in, just a little 3-foot piece of wire. She says, is that a live wire? I'd say, Ma, look, a live wire. And I'd run over to her. I'd say, don't. Now, you know, that scares me. I'd say, look, it's a live one. Well, you know, it was that kind of a relationship. So I'm sitting in there at my desk, and I got the old cans on my ears, and I have made contact with this guy. And suddenly, I stand by, and everything is controlled. Breeze is coming in. The birds are tweeting outside of my window. And I have just stood by, and he has just said to me, da 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 da. He just got that out of his mouth. He had just said, okay, okay. Da 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 da. When suddenly, boom! And I didn't know anything else. All I knew was that there was this flash of blue. I saw a tremendous flash. Just blue, boom, like that. It was as though, well, like somebody had thrown a hand grenade right in the room. Just went, boom! It was blue, flash. I didn't know what happened. I was out. I was completely, I guess I was out. I was out of consciousness. I was gone. And it was a moment like that. And the next thing I know, I'm coming to. And there are a lot of people yelling. People are screaming, hollering. And I'm sitting at my desk, and my chair has been spun around. And my chair, the back of my chair has been broken off. Yes, busted right off. The top of my 6-foot rack is just hanging off to one side. It knocked two 19-inch panels right out. And there's nothing but a great cloud of smoke, just gray, blue, green, electrical smoke coming off of this. And I can see the screen has a slit right down the middle of it. And I don't know what's happening. I could just hear a big, fantastic roar in my ear, just roaring. And my mother and my brother, everybody is pouring in. They're all hollering and they're shit. What happened? And my mother took one look at the side of the room. She said, "What did you do now?" And I'll never forget the sight of the room. It was as though somebody had driven a truck from the inside of the room at the wall and hit it. The whole house was bowed out. There was a crack from the roof of the house all the way down to the ground. The whole house was pushed out. To this day, I don't know how this happened. And I'm just sitting there. My cans are on my head. I'm sitting there waiting. And for some crazy reason, I kept thinking of this guy in Denver. He's waiting. He's hung there. Wait, just a minute, Ma. She said, "What do you do? What did you do now? For crying out loud." And I'm sitting there, and my shirt, it was only then that I noticed that my shirt, one whole arm was gone. I don't know where it went. One arm of my ball suit was gone, and we had a game coming up the next day, and my arm is gone. And I sat there, and I just sat, and I just sat. Well, I can only tell you. Well, I think I can use the expression. When my old man got home that night, there was hell to pay. I paid hell. Considerably. He went out, he took a look at the wall. He says, "You are not going to fool with that junk anymore." And I'm squeaking. And I realized that I had been fooling with. And I went out, I looked, my antenna was gone. My world wiped out. Gone. There was hell to pay.